Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
BangTheBook.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to the return of the Gridiron Gambling Report, presented by BangTheBook.com. This is our NFL betting podcast. I'm your host, Adam Burke. Joining me, as always, back for a third season, the wonderfully talented Mr. Cole Ryan. Cole, how's it going today, buddy?
It is going excellent. I'm very fortunate. It feels great to be back together again, and more importantly, it feels great to talk about football. I missed it already, and I know we still got several months until everything kicks off, but it's always fun to talk about the season.
Yeah, it absolutely is. A lot of things going on in the NFL. The reason we're bringing the show back now here in the first week of May, obviously the NFL draft just wrapped up, but also win totals have come out at Westgate Superbook in Las Vegas. My NFL win total series is going to be posting over the next 6 days. I've already posted the AFC East and the NFC North, the two divisions that we're going to talk about today. And then I'll post one division each day until I get through with the NFC West. But a couple of things to take care of before we get into the NFL portion of our podcast here. Obviously, you can hear Cole Ryan every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on Betting the Buckets, the tremendous NBA betting podcast that we have here at Bang the Book. You can hear me every Monday and Thursday on the Bettors Box, our MLB podcast, talking about Major League Baseball. Cole, anything that you want to plug before we get into the show here?
Wow, I think you hit it, and I love both shows. I'm a big fan of yours. I love baseball. You and I talk baseball all the time, and I look forward to that on a weekly basis. And of course, Betting the Buckets, the one I do in the NBA with the NBA playoffs here. It's always fun to talk about that. So no, I think you hit all the good ones, and I'm ready for some football.
Well, you and I both had a good conclusion to our favorite forms of football last year. Your New England Patriots taking down the Super Bowl, my Ohio State Buckeyes winning the first college football playoff. So hopefully the 2015 NFL season and the college football season have similar outcomes in store for us. We'll talk about the Patriots here in a little bit. But I want to begin with the Buffalo Bills. I'm going to go through these alphabetically as we go through the divisions on these shows. We're going to have four shows. We'll be on probably every Tuesday. Next show will obviously be the AFC South and the AFC West, NFC East, NFC North, and so on as we finish these up. But we'll start with the AFC East, start with the Buffalo Bills, and a lot of transition this offseason for the Bills.
Well, and they needed it. I mean, it was a bit surprising that Marone stepped down, and you and I talked about, at least I thought, what a bonehead move it was. He thought he was moving on to greener pastures and a different job. That didn't work out, but they definitely made a splash in bringing in Rex Ryan. And, you know, when you bring in Rex Ryan, what you get, and you get a player's coach, and you get a defensive-minded coach, and you get somebody who's ready to make bold claims and get his team to perform, usually without a lot of talent. At least that's what he did with the Jets early on. And so, to me, that was a somewhat positive move. I'm not a big fan of his, of course, but I do think he gets the most out of his players from a defensive standpoint. But the bigger news was, of course, the transactions they made with, you know, bringing in Shady McCoy and Percy Harvin. And it all comes down to one thing to me with this team, though. Can they do it with their quarterback, E.J. Manuel? Now, of course, they go out and get Matt Cassel. But that's going to be the ultimate decisive move for this team if they can make it work with a quarterback. And maybe, unfortunately, for Bills fans, it really depends on how you look at it. I don't think Rex Ryan cares. I think Rex Ryan wants to have a good defense, and he wants to run the ball. And so I don't think he cares who's taking snaps. And you can't really argue. I mean, he did very well going to the AFC Championship game with Mark Sanchez. So why can't he do it with Matt Cassel? Or why can't he do it with an improved E.J. Manuel? So he brings in a staff. He goes out and starts to plug with some players that really fit his system. And from there, you could say the sky's the limit, but it really depends on what you look for in a team.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, the dichotomy and the contrast between Doug Marrone, who opts out of his contract, basically gives up on the players. You know, it may have been something with the front office. But then you go to a guy like Rex Ryan, who, as you said, a player's coach. You know, everybody in the Jets organization knew that Rex Ryan's time was coming to an end. And yet the Jets played hard throughout last season, all the way up until the final week. And I think there's something to be said for that. I think it means, you know, more in the NFL than probably in other sports. But, you know, I kind of like what the Bills have done this offseason, but at the same time, I kind of don't. I understand that they're going to want to run the football. Greg Roman did that when he was part of Jim Harbaugh's staff at Stanford. But not really a big surprise that he wants to run the rock. But, you know, with the Bills, I'm really curious to see how much the Sammy Watkins trade from last year's draft holds this team back, because they didn't pick until the 50th selection this year, took Ronald Darby, a corner out of Florida State. I don't really know if they needed a defensive piece right away, but you know, Rex Ryan, as we've said, a defensive-minded guy. I'm very surprised that you were able to get Shady McCoy for Kiko Alonso. Now, I know that a lot of it had to do with the financial aspect for the Eagles, but, you know, McCoy is a game-changing running back, and as you said, with the uncertainty at the quarterback position, that's really what they needed, because Fred Jackson and C.J. Spiller wound up not being those guys.
Oh, you're right, and I think it really gives this team hope, actually. You're right, they go out and they grab, you know, Ronald Darby. You know, he's a speedster, but what he is to me is he's a guy that fits in the Rex Ryan system, and he's not what I would have wanted them to draft. To me, when they go into that draft, I wanted to see nothing but offensive linemen, especially since they were drafting so late. They do get guard John Miller. He's a tough guy. He fits the, you know, Rex Ryan's kind of mold for a strong guy at the point of attack when they run the ball. So he's kind of getting the pieces together for what could be I won't call it a good offense because I don't think it'll be good, but it really just has to be doable, because in a Rex Ryan offense, if you can run the ball and take the pressure off the passer, then those lanes become wide open for guys like Percy Harvin, who's a slant guy, like you mentioned, Sammy Watkins. So a lot is going into this system. Do you buy into the system? Do you buy in what's going on with this team? Because that, to me, is the difference. And to me, there's lesser-known guys who they lost. To me, better defensive starter last season, that safety, Denoris Sirski. You know, he signed with the Titans, so they lost him. So to me, I really want to see what Rex Ryan can do with this defense. And you know I love Kiko Alonso. I liked the Bills last year. I thought they would have done – they did well anyway, but I thought they would have done so much better if he was there. But that's a whole different story, because it's all about the now. And to me, they're starting to get that mold of a team that can play against the Patriots. And if you ask me, the AFC East in a whole is ready to make this division a lot more even than it has been in recent years. And that's, I don't want to say it's led by the Bills, because I think there are other teams who are ready to actually take the charge now, but I think you have to like the direction they're going in. And it really depends on what they do on from here on out. But to me, with McCoy in the backfield, you could run the ball all day long. And that's what he wants to do too. He wants a ton of carries. So he can work out, but the offensive line, you know, I'm a big trenches guy, so that's got to change.
Well, looking at this Bills defense from last year, they gave up 42 first downs via penalties. You have to figure that there's probably a little bit of a regression in that number. They forced 30 turnovers, led the league in sacks with 54, and they led the league in points allowed per drive with 1.37. So this is a team that has some playmakers on defense. Kiko Alonso didn't play last year from the torn ACL, so really that's more of a loss on paper for Buffalo, you know, than it is in practice. Looking at this one, a win total of 8.5 for the Bills. What's your pick here?
I'm going to go under. I think, you know, I'm not a big guy that looks too much at the draft picks, because obviously they got to develop. Same goes with the schedule, but I do see they have a tough stretch of schedule. Three straight road games with the Jets, the Pats, and the Chiefs in November, plus they end the season with two out of three games on the road against the NFC East before wrapping it up with the Jets. I think they're heading the right direction. I think the players are going to buy into this team. They're going to get up for certain games. They'll probably play well out of the gate, but I'm going to go under with this one.
I'm going to go under with this one as well, and I'm going to take the opposite standpoint of playing well out of the gate. I think they're going to struggle out of the gate. They're going to be an underdog in three of their first four games. Depending on how the Giants and Bills look over the first 3 weeks, they could wind up being a home dog against the Giants as well. Right now, they're your standard issue, three-point favorite with the lines from CG Technology. But Indianapolis and New England, probably both going to be losses. Long trip to Miami. Miami's a team we'll talk about next, so I'll kind of hold off on that one. But, you know, just looking at their schedule, five of their last eight on the road, you know, so if they do gel toward the end of the season, they have a chance to go over this number. But ultimately, the problem for me is that teams are going to flood the box against the Bills, and they're going to force E.J. Manuel or Matt Castle to beat them. I don't think either one of those guys can beat too many of the defenses in the league. So give me the under on that one. Any final thoughts with the Bills?
No, I think we hit them up. Like I said, to me, the development of the quarterback. If they can get something out of E.J. Manuel, we could have a whole different team together, because that will take the pressure off the run, open up the offense, and I think the defense plays up.
Well, the Miami Dolphins are a team that I was very high on last year. You weren't as high on them. They wind up finishing 8-8 last year. This year, they come out with a win total of 9, underjuiced at minus 130 at Westgate Superbook. And I really like what they've done this offseason. They've given Ryan Tannehill some more weapons to work with. This offense has gradually improved under Joe Philbin. Earlier in the year, last year, it looked like there was a chance that Philbin would be fired. But he winds up sticking around. Tannehill looked better for the most part last season. What do you think of the Dolphins so far?
I love what they've done in the offseason. Now, if it were me, the one thing I may have done is parted ways with Philbin, who they brought back. But you're right, Tannehill hasn't looked bad. He's just never had the support, whether he's, he hadn't had the offensive line. We know that was horrible a couple years ago. He's getting sacked every other play. And then it just seemed like they couldn't keep up, whether the kicking game failed him or whether his weapons failed him. Mike Wallace obviously caved in, but they cleaned house. They got rid of all these guys, Goodson and Hartline and Wallace, and they basically shipped out. It seemed like at one point they had nobody to catch the ball. They bring in Kenny Stills. To me, bringing in Jordan Cameron is going to be huge. Also, if you're going to look at the draft, which I think you will too, I think they did well there. A lot of people, at least from what I saw, weren't really necessarily high on what they did in the draft. Of course, they're going to be high on their first pick, because to me, Devontae Parker is a good pick who slid, probably should have been taken earlier. He was some people consider to be the top wideout in the draft, so you throw that with Stills and Jordan, and already they have an offense that are going to put up points, and they bring in some guy named Sue on defense, who I heard is going to be pretty good. So to me, teaming him up with Jordan Phillips is a big compliment to Sue. I think they play well together. I really like what they have going on in Miami, and I think this is the team that's going to challenge New England this season for the title.
I really like him as well. I do see some problems for him, and I'll talk about those a little bit more when I get closer to my pick. But, yeah, I really like the Devontae Parker pick. He's actually the player I was hoping that the Browns would take, although I don't necessarily mind the pick of Danny Shelton, which we'll talk about here in a few minutes. But the thing for the Dolphins is that they were mediocre in a lot of statistics across the board. They went from 26th in points and 27th in yardage to 11th in points and 14th in yardage. So that was very good, but they gave up more points this season. So, there's some give and take there with what they did in 2014. But like you said, the moves that they've done, they bring in Sue, they improve the talent at the wide receiver position. And also, there were some other things with the Dolphins last year. I mean, Caleb Sturgis was only 9 of 16 on kicks from 40 yards or longer. And, if you look up and down the betting card every Sunday, the lines are almost always single digits. These numbers are very close, very tight games. You need a kicker that you can rely on. So Sturgis is going to have to be significantly better this season than he was last season. What do you think about the Dolphins' defense? I mean, last year they gave up 27 or more points in 8 games, and they were just 1-7 in those games. Do you think that Sue's really going to make that big of a difference?
Well, I do, because of where they play, right? I mean, think about it. You have a guy, Sue, who's going to wreak havoc, and if you're in the AFC East, you want to wreak havoc up front because you want to get pressure on Tom Brady. So although I think they paid a crazy amount of money to get him on board, he could be just what they needed, because when you can pressure the quarterback, you can get turnovers. I mean, this is a team, overall turnover margin of +2. But like you said, when you look at numbers across the board, whether it's points for, points against, offensive rank 14, defensive rank 12, I mean, it was all bland. There really wasn't much to stand out. You and I talked about late in the season, how it seemed like the Dolphins had given up to me, at least on defense. I mean, they really, they kind of, I don't want to say gave up completely, but it looked like they just said, hey, let's go out there and just try to get a shootout and outscore the opponents. And that wasn't working out because their offense was in flux and they were still adjusting that offensive line. So I think the defense is going to have a complete turnaround. I really think this front line is going to be one of the better front lines in football. And I think that makes all the difference for this team.
I'm actually very, very interested in the Dolphins at the beginning of this season, because they're favored in their first 6 games, and then the schedule takes a massive step up in class. So I use that as a segue into our pick here on the Dolphins win total of 9. I'll go first with this one. I'm going to go under. I hate going under with this one because I really like the talent on this team. I'm high on their ability to improve. But as I just said, the schedule is really rough. In week 8, they take on New England. Week 9 at Buffalo. Week 10 at Philadelphia. In that span, they also play at home against Dallas, Baltimore, the Giants, Indianapolis, and New England. They have a cross-country trip to San Diego. To me, I look at this Dolphins schedule and the way it shakes out. I think they can really start 4-0 before the bye week. They've got winnable road games at Washington and Jacksonville, another winnable road game right after the bye at Tennessee. It's a team that can start out really hot, get some perception going in their favor, and then I think you can fade the hell out of them the rest of the way because the schedule takes a massive step up in class.
Yeah, I'm going to go over. I'm going to disagree a tad. I do agree that I think they go out to a hot start. In fact, I think they could really be undefeated out the gate, and I know you called for 4-0, I believe you just said, and I think they could actually be 6-0. I think they could go out real hot, you know, and that means they're lining up for a game with New England at New England undefeated for about, you know, week 8, I believe it is. And you're right. I didn't like that stretch of schedule at New England, at Buffalo, at Philly. And we're talking about games in November, so you know they're going to be cold, which is a big bugaboo for this team. And although they do end the season with back-to-back games against the Colts and the Patriots, look, 4 to 5 of those games are at home. You know, so to me, when you get Miami playing at home in December, their road game is at San Diego. So although it's a coast-to-coast trip, it's going to be in warm weather. I think this is the year this team responds. And believe it or not, I think this is the year this team wins the AFC East. Give me over.
Is this wait a minute. Hold on a second. Did you just say you think they win the AFC East?
I did.
Wow. I mean, I know that there's a lot of talent on this team, but and clearly they're the second most talented team, I think, behind New England. But,
sure.
You know, can they really go that far with Philbin? I mean, is he a guy that can maximize his talent that much?
What I really think you need to look at here, and look, I'm with you. Last year I wanted to fire Philbin. I didn't know if the defense gave up on him because, like many coaches, he's lopsided in his direction. But I really think bringing Sue on board changes this team that much because I think his pass rush not only allows them – look, this is a team that beat the Patriots to open the season last year, so you know they can play with them anyway. So I think Sue gives them that much of a difference, at least right now, and that gives confidence to the secondary. But I really think it's going to help with the turnovers. And to me, this offense has always been ready to play with any team in the league. They just, as you mentioned, had problems with field goal kicking, so they were losing the close games, and they were giving up. And so when the season was near the end, they threw in the towel. Not this year. I think those last two games against the Colts and the Patriots are going to be pivotal games, and I think they're going to win.
Wow. I like seeing you go on a limb here. I know last year it was Buffalo, and unfortunately Kiko Alonso got hurt, so that kind of changed the dynamic of that pick. But kudos to you for being able to be unbiased in the division with your beloved New England Patriots, who we're going to talk about now. Reigning Super Bowl champions. We'll put aside all the Deflategate garbage and everything else that's gone on, the tampering with Darrelle Revis and all that type of stuff. Is this a team capable of repeating a Super Bowl champion?
Well, you know, I don't want to sound hypocritical by saying yes and then saying that they're not going to win the AFC East. Do they have the talent? Look, you got Belichick and you got Brady. There's always a chance this team can do well, and there's always a chance this team can go back to the Super Bowl and win it. But it's never easy to defend the Super Bowl because you always have a huge target on your back. Everybody is out to get you anyway. They're out to get you when you're Brady and Belichick and the Patriots because of all the success you have, but it's only going to be amplified with what's going on. I do think they're the kind of team right now that is showing to me that they are worried about what's going on and that the rest of the division is catching up. Think about it. Each and every week, you're going to be going against the Jets, who have a strong front line, the Bills, who have a strong defense, and the Dolphins, who have a strong front line. So every week, they're going to have to worry about Brady when they're playing in the AFC East, never mind when you go outside of it. But when they drafted and they picked guys to bolster the trenches, really on both sides of the ball, with Brown and Trey Flowers, but then nasty offensive linemen, Shaq Mason, Trey Jackson, this isn't a team that's looking to go, hey, you know, we're going to sit back and lose a couple years. Of course they want to win the Super Bowl and move on, but I think it's a scenario where the rest of the division is catching up with them. And although teams like Buffalo and the Jets aren't ready to overtake them, I'm not surprised at all and haven't been to when we go into New York to play Buffalo or New York or the Jets and we lose, and I keep saying we for my team, I'm sorry. But I think they're catching up with the Patriots, and I think that's going to be a big reason that they're going to struggle this year. Now, chance to make the playoffs, and I obviously don't want to give them my pick too early, of course, and they're going to be in the running all the way through, but I'm not ready to crown them Super Bowl champs again.
Well, looking at this one right now, their win total currently sitting at 10.5. You're going to have to pay a little bit of a premium to take the over there, which I think is understandable. And to me, it comes down to a matter of consistency. Patriots have been consistent under Bill Belichick. Tom Brady has been a consistent starting quarterback. And I'm not sure that the Bills and Dolphins have developed that attribute yet.
Oh, and maybe not, but what I see is, look, I'm glad they kept Devin McCourty. I'm not really upset they lost Revis because I wouldn't want them to match that price tag. And Browner, to me, was a bit overblown, but it seems like their entire secondary has to be revamped. They're losing Vince Wilfork. He gives a leadership presence more than anything. He's a big body. Malcolm Brown can fill that gap, but he's a young kid. You know what I mean? They're bringing in the right people, but to me, a lot of transition. On offense, we're taking flyers, basically, on Brandon Gibson and Kevin Dorsey. But of course, we're not paying much, but that's all right. Scott Chandler, I think he could fill that void lost by Aaron Hernandez if Gronk can stay healthy. But losing Ridley, losing Vereen, that's bad news. Plus, what I don't like is that bye week really early in the season for the Patriots. I think that hurts a veteran team.
Yeah, sorry I threw it to you so quick. I had to mute my phone and cough there for a second. But it's interesting that you bring that up because it was something that I harped on last year when I was looking at the Denver Broncos schedule because they had the week four bye. With an aging starting quarterback like Peyton Manning. And late in the year, we saw the effects of having to play week in and week out for Peyton Manning. The arm strength was down. You know, I mean, he's not a mobile guy to begin with, but he really had trouble in week 16 and 17 and then into the playoffs in that game against Indianapolis. So I think that there's some credence to that. I think that, you know, the Patriots really get unlucky with the timing of the bye. They obviously have a tough schedule for finishing in first place. They play Dallas, Indianapolis, both on the road. They play Denver on the road. So they're arguably their three toughest games are on the road. And, you know, this is a very good team, but, you know, four out of the last six on the road. New England has a great home field advantage. So there are some stumbling blocks here. And you mentioned the loss of talent. That's certainly a big deal. They bring in Jabal Sheard, who I think is going to have an impact in this division as a good run stopper and a good pass rusher. But, you know, there are some concerns. And another concern that I would have, and this is something that often gets overlooked in the NFL, it's something that you see more in sports with shorter off seasons like the NHL or Major League Baseball, but the Patriots played a lot of football last year. And as you said, they're an older team. I think there's a little bit of a carryover effect there, a little bit of a hangover effect. And if the Patriots are going to go over this win total, given some of those tough road games, they basically have to hold serve in all the games that they're supposed to win. Not a big margin for error there.
No, not at all. And you mentioned tough road games at Dallas, at the Colts, at Denver. Not to mention the last three or four games on the road against the Jets, Dolphins, and the Texans. And not only that, but you're dealing with a team that can be beaten defensively with a good scheme, and you're dealing in a division, you know, with the Jets and the Bills that have defensive-minded coaches. Brady doesn't have the arm strength he used to, and you saw it last year in the Super Bowl. You saw it everywhere you looked. He got by with those short passes. He got by with these, you know, just little quick hits to guys like Edelman and especially, you know, Vereen in the Super Bowl. He lit him up. Now you take away those little outlets. You try to replace them with new players trying to pick up where they left off. That's going to allow defenses to crowd the box. And if you've got a strong front line, you don't even have to crowd the box. So Miami doesn't have to. They'll just go with their natural front and try to get after Brady, and that'll allow their secondary to cheat. And I think that's bad news for this team. I've already, of course, you know, shown my hand, so to speak, but I really think they stay under this total.
Yeah, I'm really torn on the total. I mean, I think 11-5 is very doable given the talent on this team. As long as Tom Brady stays healthy and stays upright, you know, he has all sorts of weapons in the passing game. The concern, of course, would be some of their losses in the running game, mostly out of the backfield, because guys like Vereen, I mean, Vereen was invaluable in the Super Bowl. And that was a prop that we nailed talking about Vereen's receptions. I think he had 11 or 12 in that game. So you take that away, you know, teams are going to be more willing to come after Brady if they don't have that guy to keep him honest. Right now, I don't see that guy on the Patriots roster. I'm going to lean over just because, you know, they've really won 11 or more games in several of the last seasons. But man, it's a really dicey pick. And like you said, like we've talked about here, and it's not really something that's going to pertain to the Jets just yet, but Buffalo and Miami are getting closer from a talent standpoint to the Patriots.
Yeah, and truth be told, I don't think the Jets are too far away either. I really think this division starts to even out a lot more starting this year.
Well, let's talk about the Jets here. We'll talk about their new head coach, Todd Bowles. And you know, it's always interesting when you look at first-year head coaches. Obviously, there's no broad brush you can paint these guys with. It's going to be on a case-by-case basis. But what do you think about the situation that Bowles inherits here?
First of all, to me, that's the best pickup for the Jets. I know everybody will point to Revis, but you know, he's a defensive-minded coach. He's coming into a place where they've already played great defense. They already have a stout defensive line. I think they ranked 6th last year in defense. The turnover margin, minus 11. Okay, look, they got some stuff to work on. There's no doubt about it. But to me, this preview, so to speak, is a lot like the Bills preview. Their defense is going to be great. They brought in Darrell Revis, Antonio Cromartie, veteran guys that play in the secondary, which, again, fits right into the system. And they got a gift in the draft and Leonard Williams dropped to them. And so to me, this defense will be better, and it allows them to still make moves before the season kicks off because now they have pieces they can trade. So to me, on offense, it's all about the quarterback. What can they get out of the quarterback? Do they go to the veteran in Fitzpatrick? Does Geno do anything for him? You know, Baylor quarterback Bryce Petty, they drafted. He's a project. Look, he's not going to do anything. So what are they going to do? They're going to run the ball. They got Powell and Ivory, and they got Ridley, as I mentioned. So to me, they're headed in the right direction. They're just not there yet, but they're a team that can really wreak havoc, especially on the defensive side of the ball. If you can play great defense against anybody in this league, you can stay in this game. And to me, that may be all they need.
I think it's really interesting that a lot of their moves were focused on defending the pass. And, you know, as you said, their run defense is pretty good. They do draft Leonard Williams, who's going to be a freak against the run. I mean, they brought in this offseason Darrell Revis, cornerback, Buster Screen, cornerback, Antonio Cromartie, cornerback, and even Marcus Gilchrist, who's going to provide some depth at safety. So the Jets knew what they had to work on. If you look at their performance from last year, they only forced a turnover on 5.5% of their defensive drives. League average is 12%. So you're looking at a serious spike, I don't want to say almost by accident, but just because it should naturally regress closer to the mean. So that's definitely going to help the Jets' defense because, look, it's going to help the Jets' offense as well because, you know, when you force turnovers and create shorter fields, you know, even subpar offenses can find ways to score points. And the Jets are a team that, you know, is fairly close, all things considered. They play good defense. If they can run the football, you know, that's going to really help them. But they have some weapons. Jason Merrill, Kellen Davis, they picked up Brandon Marshall. Jeremy Curley had a fine year. Eric Decker was good. They've got guys that can catch the football so long as they can find somebody that can get them the football. So, you know, they don't lose a home game by going to London this year, which helps them out. They have a reasonably manageable schedule. But their win total is all the way up at 7, which I think is a very, very tough number to fire on the over.
I do think it's a tough number, and you're right. The offense is set up. All those guys you mentioned, especially Brandon Marshall, who will be coming to New York with a chip on his shoulder, I'm sure, will be out to prove something, right? They'll be out to prove they can do it. It's really a matter of if you can throw it to them. Now, the theme I think you'll see with not only the Jets, but as we mentioned, the Bills, is that they want to play tough defense. They want to establish the run, and then when other teams try to pile up that box because they know they're not going to pass, that's when they're going to get open passing lanes, and you're going to rely on guys like Brandon Marshall to catch the ball, although he may be covered or although the throw may not be that great. That is a lot to rely on to me in this kind of situation. And it's really how this defense evolves with the new hiring and head coach. And I think it'll be just fine. I think the Jets are one of those teams that gets better as the season goes along. And I'm not ready to say they're back by any stretch of the imagination, but they're definitely headed in the right direction.
Yeah, for a pick, though, on the win total, I'm going to go under 7. And part of it is because I really hate this quarterback situation. I think there's some untapped potential in Geno Smith. I mean, he's only entering his age 25 season, only played 29 starts in the NFL. I think there's a little bit of growth there. But while I like the Bowles hire, I hate the hire of Chan Gailey as the offensive coordinator. Because if you look at what Gailey's done as a coach in the NFL, only twice in 12 years has he had a top 10 passing offense by yardage. I know that's not what the Jets want to do, but in order for them to succeed, Geno Smith or Ryan Fitzpatrick, whoever it is, has to provide some sort of tangible upgrade to what they had last season. I don't really think that Gailey is the guy to do that. So I'm going to look for the Jets to post somewhere around a 5-11, 6-10 year. And then I'll be interested to see what they do in next year's draft and offseason, because the defense is on the cusp, but the offense is going to need some help.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up assistant coaches, because people who are, you know, handicapping football already at this time of season should know about the offensive and defensive coordinators that are brought in, even special team guys for that matter, because it makes a difference. To me, for my prediction on this, I wish I could pick a push, but that's just too easy. So I'm going to go under, but I'll pick a more around 6 wins. Again, tough schedule. I mean, besides the Browns early, who are a very good team, by the way. I mean, they're not maybe very good to stretch, excuse me. But they'll be competitive against the Jets. Then they're at the Colts, the Eagles, and at Dolphins. That's a tough stretch to start. They end with 2 out of 3 on the road, to include at Dallas, at Buffalo, and the Patriots are sandwiched in there. Just a tough, tough stretch. They're not ready there yet, but they're close. I'll go with 6 wins, keep this just under. Would take the push. Wouldn't be surprised if they got 7, but I'll go under.
Yeah, and we're also getting either even or plus money. I'm not sure if these are 10-cent or 20-cent or 30-cent lines at Westgate. But, you know, the over was juiced at minus 130 when it opened. So I also like the added value of taking the under there. So let's look at the Baltimore Ravens. We'll move into the AFC North now. The Ravens, win total of 9, over at minus 125. And they made the playoffs last year, wound up knocking off the Pittsburgh Steelers to pick up a postseason win, and then a near miss in their second game against the New England Patriots. Baltimore is a very interesting team year in and year out, but I think especially so this year.
Oh, look, as a Patriots fan, I hate the Ravens. I mean, they're one of the teams that always give us fits. They're one of the teams when you think the minute they're going to collapse and be bad, whether it's, you know, the Rice fiasco or whatever, they still come back and they still do great. And look, they lost 8 free agents, at least last time I counted. That includes Jacoby Jones, Torrey Smith. But truth be told, I don't think any of them will be missed. A lot of things that go unnoticed when people handicap teams is how the front office does. And they're a very good organization, of course, with Ozzie Newsome there. Much like the Patriots, they always keep this team loaded and ready to go, and I don't think that'll change again this year. I mean, think about it. Their defense ranked about 8th last year, and their offense was pretty good, and it looks like the offense can only get better in the draft. Of course, you know, they grabbed Breshad Perriman. He'll be a vertical threat, could replace Torrey Smith, should replace him. And then they grabbed the best tight end in the league, or in the draft, sorry, with Max Williams. So to me, they're already adding weapons. We talked about assistants. Mark Trestman's here. Flacco's here. We know this offense will do well. They re-signed Forsett, brought him aboard. I don't see any slowing down in this team.
I have a few more reservations than you do. I do like what they did in the draft, and I almost always like what the Ravens do in the offseason. As you said, a very, very good front office. Really the only black mark on the organization is the awful way they handled the whole Ray Rice incident last year. But I think it's interesting what they do. They go from Gary Kubiak, who winds up getting the head coaching job with the Denver Broncos, and go to Mark Trestman. And Trestman, you know, I believe we talked about this hire on one of our last shows last year, in that Trestman is a guy who's far more comfortable focusing solely on the offense than he is on the total package, because he really failed as a head coach with the Chicago Bears. But now he gets a Baltimore Ravens team where a very cohesive front office, cohesive coaching staff, they're surrounded by some very intelligent people. Marty Morenwig is the quarterback's coach. NFL receiver Bobby Engram is the wide receiver's coach. And you mentioned the drafting of Perriman, which means that his father, Brent Perriman, who was a wide receiver in the late 80s and early 90s for the Lions, he'll probably be around the team as well. So there's a lot of credibility on this coaching staff. And I think that means a lot, because a lot of times you'll have character issues with players in the NFL. And I don't see that being an issue for Baltimore. I think it's going to be a team with a lot of camaraderie, a lot of team morale. And I like that in a team.
Yeah, and you know what? The coaching, and not only that, but the front office we talk about, they kind of encourage that kind of, you know, rapport with one another and the morale of the team. And that's contagious. That's something that's carried over. A lot of people thought, you know, when Ray Lewis left, that that's kind of something that would go away, but it hasn't. And to me, that's because it's an organizational thing, and it's something that the rookies learn early. And so they come in ready to go and ready to contribute. You know, the schedule to me could be a bit easier for this team. They start off on the road against the Broncos, against the Raiders and the Steelers. So 3 of the first 4 games are on the road. that can be tough. Bye week right in the middle where I like it to be sandwiched, where I'm looking at a team and how well they do. And although they play the Seahawks, Chiefs, and Steelers, they end the season with 3 out of 4 on the road. So I think, again, this is a team that'll look like they haven't skipped a beat from last year, and they'll just keep on drumming along.
They end the season with 3 out of 4 at home, which I know you meant to say had a little bit of a slip there with that one. And yep. You know, the thing for me about the Baltimore schedule is that they have 4 trips out west within the first 7 games of the season. And on one hand, that's an issue because, you know, it's early. You're still trying to get into the rhythm of the season. You're trying to get into a schedule. But also, you know, they go to Denver and Oakland in the first 2 weeks. So you go out to Denver, fly back, go back out. And then in week 6 and 7, they play at San Francisco and at Arizona on Monday night. We've talked about Arizona on our regular season shows as being one of the hardest places in the league to play. But they're getting these games while they're still relatively fresh. It's not like they're picking up these West Coast back-to-backs in weeks 12 and 13 or 15 and 16, something like that. So while they're not ideal scheduling spots, if you're going to have them early in the season, certainly the best time to have them.
Oh, absolutely. And again, I know I've said this a lot, and first of all, sorry about that gap at the end of the schedule, but it is the off season, so we're still working up. But I keep beating the ownership drum, the coaching drum, and I think that's what you do when you have these tough games on the West Coast, especially early. It's all about coaching, right? Because they're the ones who get them in a routine. They're the ones that get them in a rhythm. And the veterans and the camaraderie we talked about, they're the ones that go, hey, look, I've been here before. This is how you handle these kind of trips. I really think if they can come out of those first set of games before the bye week with a winning record, which I think they will, then it's only going to get better from there when they're hosting teams like the Jags and the Rams, you know, before playing, again, winnable games because they're at home. And to me, this Baltimore Ravens team can play with anybody at home.
Yeah, I mean, as long as they go 4-4, I mean, 5-3 would be ideal. As long as they can go 4-4 and navigate their way through it, because as we'll talk about here in the rest of the AFC North, I think the rest of the division's coming down a little bit. So I think we've kind of already spoiled our pick, but give me over 9 on the Ravens. I think this is a team that, you know, 10 wins is probably a baseline for them with how much talent is here and the quality of coaching. And I think 11-5 is certainly possible. You know, I know we've seen in the AFC North, everybody kind of beats everybody, but I think the Ravens could shine this year.
Yes, I'm on the over as well. I like the moves they made. I like the direction they're heading in. And again, they didn't skip a beat. If anything, they improved in a lot of positions that they needed. All the free agents that they lost, which looked like a big deal, now not so much. I'll go over.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up Max Williams earlier. I meant to comment on that as well, because when Dennis Pitta went out last year, you know, it really seemed like the Ravens were going to have some trouble offensively. Owen Daniels wound up stepping up there. But now to have a guy like Williams, who's a tank of a human being, you know, Flacco really likes having that safety net. So I think that's going to really elevate the offense. I can't believe he was still there when the Ravens took him. But it just seems to happen that way for good front offices, and Baltimore certainly has one of those. So let's look at the Cincinnati Bengals here. For the fourth straight year, they won enough games to make it into the postseason, and for the fourth straight year, they were one and done in the postseason. Marvin Lewis, 0-6 in playoff appearances, winds up getting another extension, I believe, this offseason. He's been the coach since 2003. Bengals have not won a playoff game since 1990, from what I looked at, and I'll double-check that here just in case I'm wrong so I don't get any death threats from Bengals fans. But Bengals looking at a win total of 8.5 for this season. What do you think of their offseason so far?
I think, first of all, if you get any death threats, don't worry. You'll just get one, and then they'll be done. See what I did right there? But, the Bengals are a team I also respect from a management point when it comes to the draft. I don't remember a year when the Bengals, at least in recent memory, that they had a bad draft. I think they once again had a good draft. And what I really like is they draft for the future and the present, and they get a combination of both. You can tell that they're, you know, prepping to replace people on their offensive line, and they're going out there. And sure, they lose a few defenders, free agency, Terrence Newman, jump ship, Taylor Mays. They're going to play for the former D coordinator in Minnesota, as we all know. But to me, truth be told, this is the closest to being the same team from a year ago out of any team that I've seen so far in the NFL. So with that in mind, the question that everybody's going to be asking, especially if this team's on pace to get to the playoffs, with a couple games to go in the season is going to be the same as it's always been. Can Andy Dalton get it done? Can Marvin Lewis get it done? Because if they can't, they used up all their last chances. They're going to be a team that's either going to win and do well in the playoffs this year, or you're going to see a dramatic overhaul of this team, in my opinion, at least from a coaching standpoint, maybe even from a quarterback standpoint. I know they put a bunch of money into Dalton, but this is truly a make-or-break year.
Yeah, I'm really out on the Bengals this year. For one thing, I don't like Andy Dalton. And Andy Dalton's a guy that we've talked about, you know, extensively on our regular season shows. He's a guy that, you know, sort of shook off the negative stigma about playing in big games. But, you know, Dalton is just – he's not – for one thing, I don't think he's an NFL-caliber starting quarterback. And they're really locked into him for a long time, and that's an issue. But while I like the running game, you know, you still have to throw in the NFL. I mean, I think that's what's going to hold some of those teams in the AFC East back, because they have good defenses and they can run, but they can't throw, those being the Bills and the Jets. And obviously the Bengals have more talent across the board. But looking at last year, they had the fourth best average starting field position, and they were 24th in plays per drive, 20th in yards per drive, 16th in points per drive. And you can't do that. I don't see how that's sustainable. If your defense is setting you up for success and you fail offensively, I don't see how you can keep winning, you know, 9 or 10 games with that kind of mindset, I guess.
Well, and to me, they have such an explosive offense on paper that it seems like if they had any other quarterback, they would be doing much better than they are. You know what I mean? You look at the emergence of, you know, their running backs, of course, A.J. Green, and their offensive line. Tyler, you've heard he was injured last year. He'll be back this year. So that'll kind of give them another pass-catching threat. To me, everything is set up for Andy Dalton to succeed. Everything is set up for Marvin Lewis to succeed. But so far, they've just been a regular season team and not a postseason kind of team. They're in a division, as we mentioned, they beat up on each other. Look, the Bengals 10-5-1 last year, and they barely made the playoffs, but they had a fight to be in the playoffs, you know, with 10 wins. And normally in any other division, that locks you, that gets you in the door. So it just doesn't benefit a team to go 8-8 in this kind of division. You have to go out there and get 10 wins, or you may not even have a shot at the playoffs. You can miss with 9 wins, where in other divisions you can. So to me, all the pieces are there. It's really a matter of Andy Dalton can take that next step. And it kind of felt like last year he had hit that ceiling where we saw the best that we were going to see out of Andy Dalton.
Yeah, and I don't think that we're, you know, stuttering through the Bengals here because we're not prepared, or, you know, because it's basically our training camp here on the show. But I think it's just because they're such a perplexing team. They're so hard to figure out that, you know, you'll see one stat about somebody, or, you know, you'll see a scouting report about somebody, and it's like, you know, I can't understand how they don't win more with this guy. Jeremy Hill, for example, you know, he had some great games last year. Giovanni Bernard, you know, kind of a pass catcher, scat back, poor man's Darren Sproles type of thing. You know, they have that. They have A.J. Green. Mohamed Sanu is a huge target in the middle of the field, and yet, you know, yeah, they're a regular season team, but, you know, at some point, when does that regular season fortune run out?
Yeah, well, look, I'm like you. Although stuttering and stammering is part of my approach on podcasts, it's not because we have lack of information. It's because really not much has changed to me. And just those guys you mentioned, give me Hill and Bernard on any other team with a quarterback, and I think you're going to do very well. And I'm not putting all blame on Andy Dalton. We all know there's more than that. They had some offensive line issues. Look, their defense didn't play well either. But to think that's going to change with the limited movement they've done in the offseason, to me, you're just reaching. If you're going to tell me the Bengals are going to be a better team, you're going to have to prove it, because to me, the people right now that are going, the Bengals are going to be better than last year, are saying things like, because Dalton will be better, not because we went out and got player X. So to me, that's something that you have to prove on the field. And up to this point, Dalton hasn't been able to do it.
Yeah, and I'm kind of reading into the context of the win total line at 8.5 here from the odds makers. You know, they're obviously expecting a little bit of a regression from the Bengals. And, you know, people will notice as they read through my win total articles that, you know, I like teams that are proactive in the offseason. I think if you, you know, feel like you're set, it means you're not. And that's what the Bengals have done this offseason. I really haven't been impressed. As you said, I like what they did with the draft only because they're planning for the future as guys start to leave the team. But that doesn't really provide much help for this season. So I'm going to look to go under 8.5. I think this is an 8-8 team, and I'd be surprised if they return to the playoffs this year.
Oh, I agree. Look, to me, you know, 8.5 is a decent number. And again, not much. I do like their future. I did like their draft. I think they did well with their draft. But we got to schedule 3 of the last 5 games are on the road, and we're talking on the road against Cleveland, San Francisco, and Denver, and the 2 home games are against Pittsburgh and Baltimore. So difficult schedule. You throw the Cardinals in the mix. They could start off okay, maybe about 500 before the bye, give or take 1 or 2 games. But I just don't think they're ready to make that next move. And I think if they struggle early, you're going to see this team realize that they're seeing the end of an era when it comes to coaching. And so I think you could see him throw it all in. Even though Lewis is a good coach, I like him. And look, if they fire that guy, he should get a job instantly somewhere else. But I'm going to take under. I could see 7-8 wins myself.
Well, look at the Cleveland Browns here. The Browns are an underdog in 13 of their 15 lined games so far from CG Technology. They play Pittsburgh in week 17. There's no number out for that game, but we can reasonably assume that they're going to be an underdog in 14 of their 16 games. However, they have a win total of 6.5. So that's pretty interesting. I think that kind of sends some mixed signals a little bit. But the Browns, a lot of transition this offseason, all sorts of problems off the field with Johnny Manziel. They really still don't have a quarterback. It's probably going to be Josh McCown, which you know shouldn't move the needle for anybody. They lost some talent. They brought in some talent, but you know, this Browns team is it's been a comedy of errors ever since they came back in 1999 with poor hires all over the place in the front office. And I like Mike Pettine, but man, is this guy set up to fail. I feel bad for him.
Well, you know, it's funny because we've been touting the management and front office in so many organizations in this preview alone, and the Browns is the exact opposite. It seems like every time they turn around, they're, you know, stepping on their own foot, so to speak, and they're just doing the wrong moves from, you know, the text gate to, you know, assistant coaches bailing to players jumping ship. Now, I will give them credit. I think they did well in the draft. I know a lot of people weren't giving them great grades. They really need to get stronger in the trenches. They were bad against the run. To me, Danny Shelton's a home run. Even, you know, center Cameron Irving, it just shows you that, you know, you remember this team you and I talked about last year when Alex Mack got hurt and he was out. This team basically took a nosedive because their offensive line was providing no protection. But, you know, Josh McCown, people want to be high on him for what he did with the Bears, but he went to Tampa, did nothing. So what is there to think he's going to turn around this year? Again, Josh Gordon's gone. Their free agent pickups, Dwayne Bowe and Brian Hartline, not bad. But like you said, it's not something that's going to move the needle. So you almost want to be in the show me something kind of mode with this team.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. I mean, you know, I don't know if Brian Hoyer is going to wind up being the starting quarterback for the Houston Texans or not. Now that he's reunited with Bill O'Brien, you know, that may elevate his game a little bit. But, you know, the Browns had no quarterback last year, and yet they got out to a 6-3 start. Once Mack went out, everything went to hell. And then Gordon comes back. There's too much reliance on him. The offense really stutters there. You know, I like a lot of the talent on this Browns team. I think they've made some good draft picks recently. I really like their draft this year because, as you said, a team that really needs not necessarily to get strong in the trenches, but to stay strong in the trenches. I mean, Irving's the pick at 19 who's going to take over for Alex Mack when he leaves as a free agent next year. You know, Shelton's obviously to help a bad run defense. It would be really interesting to see what the projections of this team would be if they had listened to that $100,000 set of analytics and taken Teddy Bridgewater instead of John Football. But you know, obviously you can't rewrite history there. But to me, the problem with this Browns team is a complete lack of talent at the skill positions. Terrence West and Isaiah Crowell are okay at running back. They're going to get some yardage and have some holes to run through because the offensive line is the strength of this team. But Dwayne Bowe doesn't excite me. Taylor Gabriel, Travis Benjamin, you know, Andrew Hawkins is okay. But, you know, I mean, not only is the quarterback situation pretty murky, they don't really have a whole lot of guys to throw to either.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, you want to come into here and go, well, you know, if they get good play from the quarterback, maybe. You mentioned the running backs, they're decent. They're not mind-blowing, but they're decent enough to provide some sort of offense. This team's got the building blocks to get there, but even if the quarterback plays well, who's he going to throw to? Who's going to be that guy? Who's going to be that Josh Gordon? They don't have it, you know, and then they lose, to me, all their pass reception power with Gordon and, you know, their tight end that bailed on them. And so why wouldn't the rest of this team bail on them? It seems like they're building. I really like their coach in Pettine, like you. I think he's getting a raw deal. But this team, they have the building blocks in certain areas to do well. They're just not giving any more compliments to it at the moment, especially from free agency. It seems like nobody wants to come to Cleveland. And so it's really putting this team in a tough position.
Yeah, it really is. I think this win total at 6.5 is way too high. Look at the Browns defense from last year. The Browns offense from last year, I should say. They were 28th in average time of possession, 25th in number of plays per drive, 27th in yards per drive, 28th in points per drive. They could actually regress in all four of those areas. And that's going to put the defense on the field a ton. And, you know, they lose Buster Screen. They were the top defense in the league in opponents' completion percentage, about 57%. Joe Hayden is obviously a star back there. But, you know, losing Screen hurts their depth. I don't think that they properly address that. And, you know, this is an offense that's just going to be awful. And the best thing I can tell you to do with the Browns, not only take their under for the season win total, but also play a lot of unders with them during the regular season because they're not going to score many points. And there's enough talent on the defense to hold down the opposition.
And we even saw that last year, too, where the defense played well enough to keep them in games. But sooner or later, late in the game, they would just fall apart because they've been on the field for too long. So, you know, like I said, this team, I'm with you. I'm going to go under on Cleveland. I don't necessarily think it'll be like a two-win season or anything, but it'll be close enough to where, you know, they're at the bottom of this very, very talented division, in my opinion. Last two out of three, not only on the road, but at Seattle, at Kansas City, two of the hardest places to play in football. By then, they'll be out of the running by the time they host the Steelers, and usually they play that game for pride, but I don't know if they'll have any left at the end of the season.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I look at this schedule, and there's an outside shot. They can start 3-0. I mean, they're favored against Tennessee and Oakland at home in weeks 2 and 3. And, you know, the Jets, a lot of transition, as we already talked about. The Browns are a 2-point dog in the look-ahead line for that. But after that, I don't see an upset potential game anywhere. I mean, maybe San Francisco at home in week 14 because I'm not too high on the 49ers. But, I mean, this is a Browns team that could very easily go 3-13 or 4-12, which – frankly, for the future of the franchise, would probably be the best thing. You know, I mean, in the NFL, it doesn't do you a whole lot of good to be in limbo. You either want to be really good or really bad so that it can help out with the draft. And I think it would behoove the Browns to be bad this year and add a top five pick into the mix for next season.
Couldn't hurt, that's for sure. Like I said, they got the pieces. They're just not ready yet. And I don't know if even a decent year, I won't say good because I don't think he can do it, but McCown will even get him there, truth be told.
Well, let's look at our final team for this show. Look at the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Black and Gold won the AFC North last year, but then got bounced in the first round by the Baltimore Ravens at home, no less. So definitely a chip on the shoulder of the Steelers for this season. And I think this is one of the most interesting win totals, sitting at 8.5 with the under at minus 130 in the opening number from Westgate Superbook, because Le'Veon Bell's impending suspension at the beginning of the year has a lot to do with this number.
Oh, I think it has a lot to do with it, for sure. I think that him being out not only kind of gives this defense a reason to be, or offense a reason to be concerned, but think about the three games they're playing at New England, 49ers, at the Rams. So you've got very good teams and very good situations. The 49ers had a bad year, but they were still okay defensively. So you're looking at what they can do. Now they bring in D'Angelo Williams. He'll be a good offset. Might even be a good running mate when Bell is healthy, but, you know, we already know he's not a feature back. So, again, as the case has been for Pittsburgh in many years, it all falls on the shoulders of Big Ben. And last year, this offense was one of the best in the NFL, no doubt. So, to me, what they did last year really speaks volumes to what they could do this year, because that high-powered offense did a lot with a defense that was aging and just plain bad. So now they go out and they snag Bud Dupree. To me, a huge first-round pick that kind of fell to them. And again, this is an organization that just knows what to do with their players, with their draft, with their personnel. And they saw a lot of people retire, obviously. Polamalu's done, Ike Taylor, Brent Keisel's gone. They lost a lot of aging players on defense. Now, the question is will experience be affected? Because you're losing a lot of guys who not only were good defenders, but they brought a lot of experience to this team. I really like doing offensively. It's going to be hard to survive that first stretch without Bell because it showed it with his injury in the playoffs. I think if he's there, that's a whole different story in that game as well. But this will be a fun team to watch this year, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think they're a very interesting team to watch. I you know, you talk about getting rid of old players and bringing in new guys, and yeah, you lose experience, but you know, one of the reasons I was so down on the Steelers last year, and I wound up, you know, obviously not being right about their win total, but I was concerned about the back seven, specifically the secondary, and some of the hardships that they were going to have covering teams because they were so old back there. So, yeah, what they lose in experience, they probably make up for in athleticism and talent. So it'll be interesting to see how their pass defense does. Looking at Roethlisberger, I'm interested to see how teams adjust to what Pittsburgh did offensively last year. Le'Veon Bell was targeted 105 times, caught 83 passes for 854 yards. And that was a big reason why Ben Roethlisberger had such a career year, because he was sacked less, took fewer hits, had that safety valve in Bell. You know, he won't have him for the first two or three games of this season, which is obviously going to be a problem. But I'm curious to see how teams adjust to that with the Steelers this year. You know, maybe it was something that they didn't game plan for as much as they should have. But it's not going to sneak up on anybody this year.
Well, not only that, but you have to wonder how much of that defensive scheme, if any, you see in the first three games without Bell anyway. Because you would think those teams that face Pittsburgh without Bell will have a different mindset to the ones that do face them. So it'll be an up-and-down kind of season for this team, if you ask me. And I think it would actually be better for this team from a betting standpoint if they started off maybe one or two stealing one of those first three games and then hitting a stretch of schedule, which is doable for me. I really think that after that bye week, which comes at the right time, week 11, I prefer them to be anywhere between 9 and 11 when I'm looking at a team. They have a very tough stretch after that, going to Seattle after the bye week and then playing the Colts, and then the last three to four games being on the road in division with Denver Broncos sandwiched in between. So it's going to be that stretch that makes the difference. I think up until that point, this team's looking about 500, and I really think that December 27th game at Baltimore is going to decide the winner of this division.
Yeah, and you look at this division, and you know, you may be asking yourself why some of these win totals are so low after there were three teams that won 10 or more games last year. Well, the AFC North played against the AFC West and NFC West this year. Last year, they played against both South divisions, NFC South, AFC South. Obviously, Tennessee and Jacksonville are bad. The NFC South didn't have a single team over 500. So, you know, just from a scheduling standpoint, based on who all these AFC North teams play, it's a much, much tougher schedule to go up against the West Division teams. Also, it increases travel, which is something you have to consider. They're going to make four trips out West, so that's definitely a concern. And, you know, I'm not sure it'll affect the Steelers as much as other teams. I think this is a 9-7, possibly 10-6 type of team. I would look over the 8.5. I think that, you know, the Bell injury or the Bell suspension gives us some value on this win total, but you know, I also trust what the Steelers do from a front office standpoint as well. And, you know, as a Browns fan, it's hard to be in a division with two of the best front offices in the NFL and the Ravens and Steelers. The Steelers consistently find talent in the later rounds of the draft or, you know, underappreciated talent in free agency. So I'm always looking at them to come up with some sort of surprise. I know they had a couple of 8-8 seasons in 2012 and 2013, but I still think this is a team that can play at a pretty high level. And Roethlisberger keeps getting better as he gets older, which is kind of incredible.
Oh, it's very incredible. And look, he's another guy that, you know, is, you know, just brought some bad news to my Patriots every time they play each other, and maybe will even in the season opener. But I really think, despite that rough patch of schedule at the very end, I mean, look what this team was able to do last year with an aging defense. Now they're going to get younger. So that's where you have to rely on coaching to get this team headed in the right direction. And I think you have a great unit there from a coaching standpoint. So I really think this number is right on. It's a scary number. Again, I'm going to go over, and I think that battle with Baltimore decides the division, which is why I'm leaning with Baltimore to actually win the division, but it's going to be close.
Yeah, it really is. Well, I'm happy we got to cover all eight teams here. Didn't have to cram anything in late for the people that are listening live. We're kind of in mid-season form in that regard, although, then again, during the season, we like to go a little bit longer anyway, so maybe we are in training camp mode. But it's great to be back on the air with you, Cole. I certainly miss doing this show. It's one of my favorite parts of the week, and you know, it's nice to have this brief little four-week set of little previews before we, you know, really get into things come August.
Yeah, it was great to be back. And again, not necessarily for me, at least in midseason form, but we're getting there. So it's great to talk football again, and it's great to be back on the air with you, my friend. Good days.
Absolutely. It certainly is. Next week, we'll be back on with the AFC South and the AFC West. So that'll give you something to look forward to if you're a fan of any of those teams. Any final thoughts for you for this first show of the 2015 season?
Man, you know, it's early, but I'm already looking forward to the season. But in the meantime, please make sure to check me out, Betting the Buckets, my NBA podcast. I do 3 times a week on the NBA playoffs. It's really fun, and it's really quick, so it doesn't take a lot of time out of your day, and it's most enjoyable.
Absolutely. Make sure you're following at ColeRyan9 on Twitter. Also follow me at SkatingTripods on Twitter. Check out my NFL win totals. Also my MLB podcast, The Bettors Box, every Monday and Thursday. So that's it for us this week. For Cole Ryan, I'm Adam Burke. Hope you enjoyed the show, everybody. We'll talk to you again next week.
Hey, guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun, too. It's a thing, and now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun, Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino-style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.